You're listening to the Just Giants podcast with Grump and the Cranky Fan.
Be sure to listen for free on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Podbean.
Welcome back to Just Giants with Grump and the Cranky Fan, the best damn podcast for the best damn football team. I am your host, the Football Grump. With me, as always, is Mike the Cranky Fan, and we are back. It's draft day morning. It's actually the night before, but for you guys, it's draft day morning. I'm jealous of you, like kids on Christmas morning, right?
Well, I mean, we're getting the gifts too, so I'd say, you know, and remember that, you know, as we start talking about the draft and who we're going to get and how pissed off we're going to be about something is, we are getting players that will make this team better than they were as the time you're listening to this. This will be a better team. We will get assets that will make this team, this roster, better. So always keep perspective on the draft when you get super pissed that they didn't get the quarterback you wanted, or we, you know, did something that you don't agree with. That in the end of the day, you know, we're getting first and second round picks and, you know, day two guys and stuff that are going to make this team better. And that's probably really mission number one for this organization, is get this team finally better.
Yeah. I think that's why it's Christmas Day for me. it's fun to see the ways in which we are going to be shaped for the next 3 years, right?
Yeah, and could be longer. I mean,
hopefully this today, it's longer.
As we're recording this, you know, on, you know, draft eve, it is the 20th anniversary of the day that, you know, the Giants, I think, had the fourth pick and traded up and got this quarterback from Ole Miss. And, you know, it changed the fortune of this franchise. So, you know, one pick can reverse the fortune of a team. It doesn't necessarily have to be the first pick, but this is the anniversary of that. So it's, you know.
Well, I mean, You where were you? Because they traded up and they got a guy from NC State, really, is what happened.
Well, at the end of the day, they had Phillip Rivers, but
right. So talk me through that day for you, that whole process. Yeah,
that was actually funny because I was in California for my sister-in-law's wedding to my brother-in-law, and I just started dating, you know, cranky wife. She was cranky girl I was seeing at the time. So was even, you know, a cranky girlfriend, I guess. And so I was by myself because she was with, you know, her sister. So I was in a hotel room just outside of San Francisco. And, you know, the draft back then was on Saturdays at noon. So back out there, it starts at 9 a.m. So I was in this small little, you know, Fairfield Inn by the airport in San Francisco, watching as all this whole thing unfolded. And, you know, there were rumors throughout the week that, you know, Eli wanted to come to the Giants, that he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't play with the Chargers and everything. And, you know, at the time it was one of those, you know, the Giants really hadn't had a good quarterback, you know, a franchise level quarterback, you know, not a stopgap guy like a Kerry Collins or something, but really since Phil Simms had retired. And, you know, they went for it, and, you know, they traded assets and they got their guy, and really, you know, let it play out. I mean, you know, I think if Eli Manning was, you know, drafted in 2022 as opposed to 2003, I don't know what kind of a leash everybody would have given him, given how everything, you know, between social media and just the increased coverage of the NFL and the Giants and the fans and everything. You know, he was allowed to mature, and he was allowed to percolate as a Giant. And I don't know what that had been like today, but, you know, the good fortune it was that we let him, and, you know, two rings later, you know, his place should be secure in Canton.
So it's interesting. Do you think that Eli Manning was allowed enough time to grow? Because he had kind of a rough beginning, and he was thrown in his rookie year. It's not like he sat the whole year.
Yeah. I mean, I never did. I don't think there really ever was any doubt, like, after year two, year three. Like, kind of, there's always been a question about Daniel Jones. And I know it's not apples to apples. Daniel Jones wasn't the number one overall pick.
The Giants Eli came out of school much, more highly regarded than Daniel Jones. So, like, the skepticism with Daniel Jones started on, you know, in January of draft year. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I think, that skepticism went right into, you know, non-dominant play. So, yeah, no, there's always been a question about Daniel Jones.
I you know, again, we're talking, you know, 2019, 18 years ago. But I, looking back on it, I don't ever remember the kind of, you know, buyer's remorse by the fans or kind of like, is this guy ever going to be the guy? I think it was just, you know, let him develop and let's see what happens around him is what I kind of remember.
Well,
you know,
see, 2004, I was so much younger, like mentally than you were. Like, I just didn't follow this stuff as close. I didn't know as much about it. It wasn't as big of a thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? As it is now. But like, I don't recall the expectations for Eli being what they are for quarterbacks now. Like,
well, it was huge.
In 2004, somebody like Daniel Jones, I don't think would have been expected to start at any point in his rookie season.
That is true.
I also don't think somebody like him would have been drafted as high. Maybe. I guess so. I mean, 2004, that year itself. But yeah, I don't think there would have been any expectation for Daniel Jones to start in his rookie year in 2004.
Right. And honestly, you know, even Eli Manning playing his, we're still coming off of that era where when you were you were a first round pick and even the number one pick, unless you were absolutely dog shit and it was like, we're just going to play you and just get you experience. I mean, his brother played as a rookie and was awful.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, I mean, it was kind of like, it was definitely unusual at the time for a rookie quarterback to be like, especially like, you know, Peyton was like, you're starting. Like day one. I mean, at least Eli, you know, we had Kurt Warner. There was a, okay, you know, by week, whatever it was, I don't remember what it was, week 9, 10, when they said, okay, you're now starting. So he did at least go through an off season, a training camp, sat for a while, learned before they made that switch. Now, today it's, you're the man. And, you know, even no matter what's going to even happen this year, whoever's getting drafted at 1, 2, maybe 4, maybe 7 around there. Those guys are going to be expected to probably start. I mean, unless the Giants do get a quarterback, I don't see that happening right away. But, you know, you could definitely see with Chicago. I mean, Chicago cleared their deck for him.
Oh, yeah.
To be the
I mean, there's no question now.
Washington cleared their deck for their quarterback. So, New England.
Did they ship away Sam Howell?
Yeah, they traded him. He went somewhere.
I don't remember. I thought I read that story, and then I was like, is that a fever dream?
I mean, New England, I think they cleared their deck, too. So, I mean, these teams are ready for a quarterback. They're ready to have this guy say on day one, this is your job. You're the franchise. Go for it.
I kind of want to – pivoting this towards, you know, today, tomorrow It's interesting you mentioned that, you know, all three of those teams have cleared their deck. The Giants onboarded. They brought in Drew Locke. And that's, you know, you can shrug your shoulders at Drew Locke, and I'm not saying that Drew Locke is the future of anything whatsoever. What I'm saying is someone purchased insurance and everybody else sold theirs.
Well, I would say I'd maybe caveat that a little bit because, you know, in spite of some reports we've heard recently, we don't know if Daniel Jones will be ready for day one. You know, week one starting. And if, you know, if we don't decide to either trade up, get the guy we want, or just punt or whatever, we may not get that quarterback of the future in this draft. So we have to be ready for that eventuality that Daniel Jones is not going to be ready and we don't draft that quarterback. So I think that's a little different.
And I think that's the point is those three teams have made kind of their statement without stating it that they're getting a quarterback. The Giants pretty clearly are not sure that they are getting a quarterback. There are, you know, what the hell are there? There's six consensus top quarterbacks in this draft. The Giants are picking sixth. If they were positive that they were getting a quarterback, like they know a quarterback of those six will be there. I mean, whether you want to count Bo Nix and Michael Penix that high, you know, I know everybody doesn't. If you want to count J.J. McCarthy that high, my point is they don't know. And it's partially because, yeah, it's because of where they're picking. But whatever.
Right. Well, they don't control their destiny like those other teams do.
Exactly. You know? But Chicago, those are the three that are in position. They could theoretically have gotten something other than quarterback. Everyone has made an argument for, well, what if, you know, they take this instead, or what if they take that instead? They've cleared their decks. They're taking quarterbacks, all three of them, which leads us to the Giants needing insurance anyway. They had already had it before this. But what's interesting is, you know, in this week's series of smokescreen stories and strange leaks that all contradict each other, I think that the most interesting one is the one that came from J.J. McCarthy himself, which I think was to Rich Eisen, in which he said that he had spent the most time with the Giants of any team.
Well, let's even start that off with the question that was asked. The question was, do you have any sort of like inside knowledge or anything where you think you might go? Mm-hmm. And he answered that question right away. Well, the Giants, you know, I spent time with them. I've done this, I've done that. So he didn't kind of like, you know, walk the question back or kind of hedge a little bit like, well, I don't know any inside information, but the teams I know I did spend time with included the Giants. The question was asked and he said, well, the Giants, like, kind of read between the lines there. So, I mean, again, I don't know how these conversations go when they take these guys out to dinner, or they, you know, they spend time with them, they go visit them, they do all this stuff. Like, you know, I don't know if it's one of those like kind of recruiting, like, hey, this is the plan. We plan on, you know, we're making you an offer, and, you know, that type of thing. So it's possible they may have said, you know, if you're available, we'll take you. I mean, that's not a contract. That's not a guarantee. That's not a promise, you know, and who knows? I mean, maybe J.J. McCarthy. We also think that these guys are so media savvy and they know how to answer every question the absolute correct way. Maybe he just kind of slipped out and said, you know, without saying they said they're going to pick me, but maybe just implied that they were. So,
just answered a little too truthfully.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let me ask you a couple of questions here.
Sure.
The first is, let's say that the obvious isn't stated when they're out to dinner, like if you're there, we're taking you, or we really want you, you know, something like that. Let's pretend that this story is smoke. Let's just play with that. A, is it possible that they work this kid intentionally? Where they're like, well, I mean, okay. Within their meeting of him and doing their normal due diligence, like any GM should, by the way, a GM that may have to face the very stark reality that J.J. McCarthy is the only quarterback on the board, you want to know when you pass up on him that you are not passing up on a future Pro Bowler. You need to do your due diligence. And that doesn't just mean the film room, because they have access to a lot more than that. They get to meet him. So they should be doing that, number one. So, like, even if everything that J.J. McCarthy said was absolutely true, that he spent the most time with the Giants, that's actually something that I want to hear. Just on its face. I want to know that the Giants went and turned over every leaf and found out that his friends didn't go to his birthday party and, you know...
I had the joke all teed up and you just killed me.
I'm sorry.
This isn't the movies where, you know, we make the trade and it's like, let's do our research on him now.
Yes.
You know, it works kind of the opposite. You do your research and then you make an informed decision.
Probably so. my most annoying thing about that movie, actually, is how much research is done on draft day, and some of it like super obvious too. But seriously, so in the course of that, is it possible that they're like, we don't want this kid, but let's continue to wine and dine him, because I'll bet you, you know, the reports are going to come out of how many times that we meet him. You know, even if it's not, they're not banking on him.
That's quite a smokescreen if you're having at least two or three members of the Giants, if not more, flying out somewhere, spending quality time.
Okay, all right.
Texting
you
a smokescreen. That's
enough.
A lot.
Okay, and then question B is, do you think it's possible that they tell him point blank, like, intentionally to get him to slip? Like,
that's a lot of 4D chess.
You think so? I mean, like, what's the harm in lying to him? Like, if on draft night he's available and they don't take him, like, how? Who cares?
In 5 years from now, he's a free agent, and the Giants are like, hey. And he's
well,
like, hey,
let me ask you this.
You guys lied to us.
If in 5 years Joe Shane needs a quarterback for the New York Giants, does he even have a job with the New York Giants?
I mean,
I'm asking a serious question. I don't really know.
I don't know. I mean, we could draft a quarterback. He'd be great for 4 years, and he gets a throw. Joe Theismann's his leg, and we get a new quarterback.
Fair enough.
Or just a quarterback who becomes a free agent doesn't want to be in New York anymore. I mean,
knock on some wood over there, will you?
Yeah.
All right. So then let's get into tonight.
Tonight.
Epic. Well. Let's start with this. Do you want them picking at a pick higher than pick 6 under any circumstances?
If their guy is out there and their guy, they're like, this is my quarterback of the future. I'm going to use quarterback because 95% of the time, if they're going to trade up, it's going to be for a quarterback. So
I'll tell you this. If they trade up for anything other than a quarterback, I might jump out the window.
Yeah, let's for simplicity's sake say it's for a quarterback. If there's a guy on your board that you're in love with, that you think, you know, skill set, film, the going out to dinner test, the IQ test, you know, I think this guy can play in New York. I think this guy matches what we want to do. All of those things. And it's like, this is the guy. You trade up and you get him. You don't fart around. You don't let it go. You get your guy. Because when you got your guy at quarterback, all the other problems are secondary. You can work around that. I mean, you know, Kansas City will figure out whatever problems they have going forward because they have their quarterback. And they don't have to worry about that. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, this quarterback in this draft will be Patrick Mahomes, but you're looking for your guy for the next decade is going to be your Eli Manning. You don't have to worry about Eli. He's my quarterback. So if that guy's out there and he grades at a level where, you know, this is my guy, you get him. And I have no problem doing that. And I still trust this front office, you know, 98%, you know, just – they do their research. They have a track record. Don't tell me, well, because Daniel Jones, I'm worried about them developing quarterbacks. No, save that. If they find the guy that they want, go get him. And, okay, so if it costs you an extra first-round pick or something, so be it. If you have your quarterback, that's okay. We'll work. These things kind of work out. The path to rebuilding is a lot easier when you have your quarterback. So, but it has to be their guy. I mean, it can't be, well, J.J. McCarthy is the last quarterback left and I need to get him. Like, let's say 3 quarterbacks are taken first and he's still on the board. Just because I don't want to miss out on the run, that's not why I want to do it. It has to be, that guy's my number one guy, you know, in this, and I want to go get him.
Well, in the interest of not repeating what's already been said, I agree with everything you just said, 100%. I feel like we've been saying it for a while. I feel like that's just my abject philosophy. It's double my philosophy when your head coach is Brian Daboll. I think that he's going to elevate the most out of any quarterback. So I also trust Brian Daboll's opinion when it comes to trading. What to me, that tells me if they are trading up, like, this is the best quarterback to work with.
Can I ask you a sidebar question really quick?
No, absolutely not. There's no forum for – yeah, whatever.
In spite of all the things, the headwinds that they've faced, do you think after 2 years they've gotten everything they can out of Daniel Jones? Forget the injury. I know these are big things to forget. Forget the injuries. Forget the offensive line. Forget the win. Do you think they've, for what they can control, do you think they've done everything they can?
For what Brian Daboll can control, yes. I think the on-the-field stuff – I'm gonna explain this because he played like dog shit last year, let's be honest. There's a million screenshots you can make about him not being able to read the field, missing wide-open throws, all kinds of stuff. I'm not going to deny any of that, nor am I going to defend it.
That wasn't the question, though. Yeah, go ahead.
Correct. So from what Brian Daboll could control, lasted all of about 5 plays You know what I mean? Like the first drive in the first game was going well. That's a lot like saying absolutely nothing. It's a lot like saying that the kickoff in the New Orleans Saints first season was a return for a touchdown. It means nothing because they didn't win a single game that year. It's all the same. Once Andrew Thomas went down, you know what I mean? It was a perfect storm of everything going wrong. The allocation of assets in the offseason, they flipped a coin and they went all in on weapons. They went very light on rebuilding the trenches or building depth in the trenches. They could only do so much. They gave their first round pick to the defense, not the offense, which, you know, these are all sound football decisions that are justifiable, and the coin flipped in a way that was unfortunate. That is a very diplomatic way, you know what I mean? We can get into what they should have foreseen or not. But Brian Daboll was pretty much hamstrung at that moment. Daniel Jones was seeing ghosts. He was never going to play up to the standard that he could play under those circumstances, and that's a limitation of him. You know what I mean? When I say that, I am admitting a fault of his.
Yes.
But that being said, the year prior, Brian Daboll developed an offense in which Daniel Jones could succeed without weapons. So,
and I
yes.
think that's an important point you just made. When you say, well, you know, this guy is a quarterback whisperer, he gets the most out of his quarterbacks. It's not just the play of the quarterback. It's putting him in the best position to succeed.
Right.
It's developing an offense. It's the GM getting the parts around him, but it's also the job of the head coach and the offensive coordinator to create an offense that puts him in the best position to succeed. That's why I always am very harsh on coaches in whatever sport it is. And that's why you hear me rant all the time about how much I hate the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, because I always feel like he's not putting his team in the best position to succeed. And I think that's kind of it. It's like you have to be able to put your quarterback in the best position to succeed, you have to make him, you know, get him his preparation in the off season to the point where he's, getting the most, is a sponge, that he's prepared throughout the week for the opponent coming up. You surround him with players to, you know, maximize talent so they can perform up to his talent level. It's putting him in positions where these plays work. These plays do what he does best, have the best chances of success. So that's a very important point, that they all work together, all these different things.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. You would entertain a trade down in what scenario? I mean, like, who has to be off the board for you to be like, I don't want them picking at six?
I think it depends on what the offers are first.
Well, of course. I'm not even going to pitch the idea to you of a bad trade offer, but at what point are you like, don't trade down with that guy on the board? So, like, a common example that I think a majority of Giants fans would agree with, or the largest majority that Giants fans would agree with, I'll say it that way, is if the draft goes something along the lines of Williams, Daniels, and May with the first three picks to the three quarterback needy teams, Harrison Jr. and Neighbors to the following two teams, leaving the Giants kind of in a bind with clear drop-offs in talent at both wide receiver to Romo Dunze and quarterback to J.J. McCarthy. This is a common scenario in which Giants fans are like, I want to trade down. Is that the scenario for you? For you, cranky fan, not the GM, not Brian Daboll, you.
Most likely. Because, again, I feel... My thing about quarterbacks usually is kind of like when all of a sudden you're a late riser, you feel like, to me, like a flavor of the month. It's like it's the last thing I've seen. And again, there's a perception and a reality. The reality is GMs on their boards probably had J.J. McCarthy at a certain spot far earlier than all of a sudden, you know, all the boards had him skyrocketing after the end of last season and this whole offseason, you know, car wash that they have to go through. So to me, like, I'm like, oh, J.J. McCarthy now he's entering the conversation, or Michael Penix is entering the conversation. It's like, okay, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you picked the two guys playing in the national championship as entering the conversation, but you're not wrong. It is just funny how that is, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Michael Penix wasn't even one of the two biggest names in his own conference as a quarterback coming into this season.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess not.
I mean, you know, obviously, what's his name? Caleb Williams got all the thing, but Bo Nix had a lot of, you know, he's been around for so long and people have opinions on him. I mean, there's people that love him and people are just not into him. But it's interesting. I heard this. I'm going to give the credit. I think it was Ryan Russillo said it on his pod today. It's like, how come Michael Penix gets a pass for being crappy at Indiana, but Bo Nix still has Auburn haunting him?
Well, it's a fair point, but there's a lot of different things in there. Like Indiana, I believe he was running more in that system. He wasn't really he wasn't really truly a pocket passer. They certainly weren't protecting him. Not that he can protect himself, but it is kind of interesting though. Like Bo
it's
Nix,
narrative driven.
Yeah, basically. A little bit, but for me, Bo Nix leaving the SEC to go to the Pac-12 is sort of like running away from competition. He was already in the most elite competition, so anything would have been viewed as a drop off. But the Pac-12 is the consensus weakest Power 5 competition. Now, last year happened to be Caleb Williams. You happen to have Michael Penix there as well. So the only thing is with Penix going from the Big Ten to the Pac-12 for me is that I view that almost as like a lateral thing. I don't know. I view that move a little bit more laterally. That's all.
Yeah. I mean,
also, how much better did Michael Penix look in with that cast around him versus Bo Nix should have theoretically lit up a weaker conference, and he just kind of continued to look mostly the same? He certainly got further at Oregon, but...
Yeah, I mean, he also, you know, he's a very stat-driven type of offense, right? You'd say his completion percentage is pretty high, Bo Nix.
What, at Oregon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, looking at Florida's offense right now with our quarterback. It's just completion percentage, 73%. But it's like, yeah, but if you're checking down, you know, two out of every three throws, your completion percentage is going to look, you know, it's going to look better than you actually are as an offense.
I think a lot of Pac-12 stuff is bombs away offense, too. And
I think it's not like the Big 12 where, you know.
No, it's not like the Big 12. But here's the interesting thing. Washington had three really good receivers for bombs away, and Oregon kind of just had Troy Franklin. So I think that's a bigger point.
Well,
go ahead.
My comparison to the Big 12 is where offense is clearly first, and, you know, all the resources these teams put in is on offense.
Yeah, but I think the better point for why it's unfair with Penix and Nix, and then I kind of don't want to talk about this anymore. But the bigger thing that I think is unfair is that Bo Nix may have went to weaker competition, but his team got I don't know if Oregon is necessarily weaker than Auburn, but in my opinion, Oregon was far less stacked than Washington. Michael Penix left Indiana, and he went to a very good offense. There are two solid tackles playing at Washington. That's big. They have three really good wide receivers. You know
Oregon
what I mean?
Oregon's a step up from Auburn in talent-wise, for sure.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And remember, too, like, Oregon has got a lot of Nike money, and they pay they have a lot of NIL money now too. So
I mean, there's a million reasons to actually go there. I just mean why you would view it as one way versus the other when you're doing scouting work.
Yeah.
So we've talked about trading up, we've talked about trading down. What do you want at six? What's the move here?
My first move, honestly, is I'm listening to offers to trade down. I think that doesn't mean that's my goal, but I'm definitely listening with a very, very open ears, because I'm going back to what am I trying to do with this team right now? And we discussed it a lot in the last episode, and we both had the same philosophy that if you're going to rebuild this team and do it the right way, doing it from the inside out makes more sense from the outside in. And if right now we are best slotted to draft a wide receiver, that doesn't mean we don't need a wide receiver and we don't need weapons for a quarterback. What I'm saying is, I would rather put myself in a position where, I need to get as close as I can to the ball being snapped. I need to get my quarterback. I need to get my offensive line. I need to get my defensive line. I need to get my, that fortified first before I really start worrying about wide receivers. And if I have the option, if somebody wants to trade up and wants to give me, more picks for this draft and for next year's draft, so I can get more assets. I can package those up because maybe next year the quarterback I really, really want and I get extra draft picks, I can throw them all in a pot and say, here, that way I can move up to two or three and get the guy I really want. I want options. So my first thing really is listening to the what are these offers that are really coming to me for someone who wants to get up to six. And we're kind of in a little we're not in the greatest spot for six. I don't think that Godfather offer is going to come, but you never know. You don't know. Somebody on their board might have a huge hard on for JJ McCarthy, and it's like, that's our guy. That we've done our we took him out to dinner, we've looked at the film, we've done everything, he's us. And you never know. You just don't know in this league. All these boards are secret. We don't know. So that'd be the first thing I would be in. And if not, based on where we are at six, rather than trade up, and because we have so many holes and we have so many depth issues, I just think you get the best guy on your board. It's probably, probably going to be the third wide receiver that's available. And I think you just take them. And, the draft is more than just the first round pick. There's other, you draft well on Friday and you do your stuff on Saturday. I said it over and over again that you don't build a team in 1 year. You don't build it on one draft. This is part of a process. And I don't think this general manager and this front office and this coaching staff feels the pressure that you have to do it now, now or never. And I think they'd stick to their plan.
I think that the first thing that I'm trying to do is trade up with New England.
Okay.
And I think that the Giants are okay with all three of the quarterbacks that we think are going to go. I think any team is okay with Caleb Williams. I think that teams would be crazy to be worried about Jaden Daniels being sleight of frame for all the upside that he gives you. And, I have my reservations about Drake May, but most of them stem from wacky feet mechanics that need to get cleaned up badly that are affecting his throws, and general arm strength. But Brian Daboll is a guy I feel comfortable with cleaning up mechanics related issues. I mean,
Me
Josh
too.
Allen couldn't hit the side of a barn. So if there's one thing that I can count on or that I feel comfortable with Brian Daboll correcting, it's mechanics. So I think that no matter what happens, one of those three, well, math tells me that no matter what happens, one of those three will be available at three. So, rumor has it that New England's listening to some trade offers. There's no incentive for a QB needy, like, there's incentive for a QB needy team that has Bailey Zappe on the roster or whatever, would trade out of that spot. They have a new regime in there that needs to fix a lot of things. It's a bad team right now. I mean, the problems didn't start and end with Mac Jones, and the problems certainly didn't start and end with Bill Belichick. So, I mean, it is certainly justifiable for them to be like, you know what, we'll deal with the quarterback thing. This is a good chance for us to build a lot more stuff if we take this trade. That's all fine and dandy.
They also don't have a GM right now, right?
No, I think I don't know. But here's
So
the big.
that means a lot, I think. It's so if you don't have a GM, you don't have anybody with a real blueprint and a vision of what they want to do.
I'm pretty sure they do, though.
Do they?
I don't know. I'm not
I
going
don't
to
think
operate on the assumption they don't.
I don't think they do. All right, but I mean, regardless, I mean that's just one thing. But yeah, I get your point. If it's the quarter, but again, it has to be if they're not in love with any of those quarterbacks, they may be looking to go down. I don't. I don't know. To me, it's. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. You got a very old owner who, is running out of time and may want to just pick a quarterback and try to find, think that's the fastest way back to being relevant is getting a quarterback. Who knows?
I don't know. They have a GM, but apparently nobody knows what he does or something. That's neither here nor there. My point is that there's a football there are reasons for them to trade out. There is no reason for a QB needy team to make that trade before draft day, in my opinion, because they need a quarterback. So there's no reason for them to take the first offer. If the leak goes out there that they got this offer, then any team was like, "Oh, that's the price, huh? Well, what if
Right.
I were to do a little bit more?" So, I mean, to me, it makes no sense for any trade from a QB needy team in that top three to make any trade before the, not, I wouldn't say necessarily when they're on the clock, but certainly before draft day.
That's why I haven't seen anything yet.
Right. But I do think that New England could be quote unquote had, you know what I mean? And quite frankly, I look at this as this isn't an indication on Daniel Jones. It's just an opportunity to get a quarterback. At this point, I think it's fair to look at Daniel Jones and just be worried about the injuries alone.
Just go younger, cheaper, healthier. That's it. Yeah.
Trading up is something I would try to do first. If that's out of the question, I'm ready to trade down because I'm afraid of exactly the same thing you're saying. If the Giants select McCarthy at six, again, I'm going to bank on Dable being Dable. And I'll just, I'm going to roll with it because I'm not also going to throw my remote at my TV for attention. But I will bank on the fact that Brian Dable makes things happen with quarter. I mean, if he can make Tommy DeVito look competent, I'm sure he can make JJ McCarthy look like something.
I think there's nothing that would make me throw the remote at the TV this year, honestly. Unless we drafted
Yeah,
Jordan Travis, that would make me throw the
ooh.
remote at the TV. But barring that brain fart of epic proportions, I don't think, any of the likely scenarios, trade down, get your wide receiver, hopefully trade up. I think all of those are just like, okay, that's what we're doing.
So that's obviously round one. What do you want throughout this entire draft process? Like, how what do you want to not be worried? Since you're going to be worried about something, something is not going to get fixed this weekend. That's just a fact. Like, they're not going to plug every hole. What do you need to see addressed? Like, with like starters.
I need to see a plan, I guess. And I think you had said something a couple weeks ago of, you can't fix everything all at once, so let's try to fix something first. I just believe that, and I'm gonna agree with you on this 100% also, but to me, this league is an offensive league. And this offense, for you name the reason, sucks. And not only does it suck, it's unwatchable at times. And to me, I think extra effort should be made on this offense. And I think it starts again with offensive line. I want to come out of this whole draft experience thinking we have a lot more options, at least that'll make the depth of this offensive line better. I don't want to go in there. I don't want to go into week one again with we, if somebody goes down, we are completely screwed. And I get it that, having a rookie as a backup is, a little scary, but I really want to start getting on to the assembly line of this offensive line is a priority of this team, and we are going to fortify it every year. Some years will be the opportunity to get a starter and a potential, right tackle of the future. Sometimes it's like this is a guy, a swing tackle that's going to help us in, a couple different spots to, we're just adding depth here. And I just think that if we come out of this, kind of like, well, we took a receiver here, but then we took another cornerback here, and then we got this guy, and it's like we haven't addressed the core issues of this team, I'm going to be pretty pissed. So it's not fancy. It doesn't have fireworks, but getting these trenches, finally getting a process going where it's going to be self-building every single year starts this year. And I think I need to see that.
Yeah, man. I think that in if any maniac were to have fallen asleep at the wheel and let me control the war room, there is a serious chance that I use every single pick on an offensive player this
Yeah.
draft. But that's madman mentality, and that is, putting too much responsibility on a child.
And that's not either of us said. Like I don't think neither of us said like every picture we only focus on the offense, but I think
Right. No,
the
no, no.
priority and the focus should be on the offense from an inside out approach.
Correct. Yeah. So that's actually how I feel. And I don't even necessarily need it to be inside out as a general philosophy. In this particular instance of how broken the offense is, it probably requires that. But like at this point, I would say they need to get at least one starter on the offensive line. At least one starter at either wide receiver or tight end, and they need to get depth on the offensive line. So like that means on Saturday evening, I better be looking at two players for the offensive line. One I know is competing for a spot in his rookie year, and one I am hoping can fill in on a during a game and not screw anything up.
It is a
And
very solid rotation piece.
but also has a projection where I'm like, I want to see him grow. Like I see he has the traits, but he needs to clean this up. This tells me in 2 years he could be competing for a spot. You know what I mean? Like I don't just mean
And that's why that guy
fodder.
may have drafted on Saturday, and that's fine.
Right. But I don't mean fodder to fill depth spots. I mean depth with the potential for growth. That's what I need from two players on the offensive line, and I need one skill position player added to this, whether it is a wide receiver that starts at one of the three spots, don't care which, and or a tight end that is, at this point, I can't count on Darren Waller to hold on to my cell phone for 2 minutes while I tie my shoe. So,
I mean, Darren Waller, he just announced he's separating from his wife. I mean, the last thing on his mind right now is football.
I'm not even sure that the Giants have been in communication with him, or if it's just been his agent. I mean, there's a lot of things wrong there. He's a shaky commitment to begin with, I would say. So he's really on, he's probably not just on thin ice anymore. He's half underwater.
And quite honestly, every single wide receiver position and every single tight end position is ripe for someone to take over and should be starting right away. That's what we're trying to get. There's no like, this guy is my wide receiver one. There is no, this guy is my tight end one. We should be able to get a guy who should be able to claim one of those two mantles immediately.
Right, like you're pretty much penciling him into a starting spot.
Yes.
That's what I realistically, out of whatever picks they have, I need to see four of them heavily committed to the offense for me to be fully happy. I don't really care where they are with the value. I don't even care if they're like, you know what, we need to make sure that we have a right tackle. So I don't care if it's a reach, we're getting this guy. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like,
That's a trade-off for a reach is something. It's like from a
sometimes
value perspective, is you getting the guy you want, you think he's the guy you need.
I'll never forget the Dallas Cowboys selecting Travis Frederick in the first round. And I thought to myself, like, I'm pretty sure, like, he's good. I like him at center, but taking a center in the first round is dumb. It was like, that was like a big turning point in the way I looked at the draft at the time, because to me, that was just like such bad value. I laughed at that pick. And then, 6 years down the line, I looked at it. It was like, who gives a shit? They got a quality starter for a very long time at an important position. It doesn't fucking matter. You forget. Oh, he was a first round pick. That's right. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that important. It's important when you're building roster over a short period of time. But if you hit on, you know, a third of your picks, absolutely, year after year, I don't think that the value matters as much.
We're playing – this is glorified blackjack, the draft, where just because I play my cards right doesn't mean I'm guaranteed anything. I still may not hit. So, you know, none of this is a guarantee, and none of it's, you know, value driven is all in perception. It's not reality. If you get, if like we talked about that before at the quarterback, if that's your guy, you know, and again, we're not talking about, I really like, you know, the quarterback at, I don't know, West Virginia. Like, that's my guy, but, you know, is obviously his value is not nearly, you know, what other people think. That's, we're not talking about that.
Will Greer.
We're kind of splitting hairs a little bit, kind of like, is this guy the sixth pick or is he the 12th pick or something? In the grand scheme of it, I think people get too, again, because we have so much time to talk about this, we get a little myopic in what is value and what does it mean. You get your guy, you got your guy, you got your value.
Right. Any final thoughts? It's the title of the episode, but.
Any final thoughts? I'm curious, not only obviously what the rest of the division is going to do too. At this point now, it's just about, you know, let's just make our picks. I mean, again, I beg Giant fans, like I said in the opening, you know, don't throw your phones because they didn't get the guy you wanted or the guy you thought was the value. You know, we never have given grades on the night of a draft, and we won't this week because we don't know what it actually means. A pick is different than production. I'm sure we'll be talking about something on our next show that we had, you know, we talked all about preparation. You've been scouting people since January. I'm sure we'll have storylines we'll be talking about. We had no idea we were going to be talking about. And that's what makes it always interesting and kind of fun.
You're not wrong about that. So I will be at John Boy headquarters in New York City tonight. I will be on the Talking Giants channel and the JM Football channel. We will be live streaming the draft. It's going to be a party, and I will be there all week for Thursday night, Friday night, and for half of Saturday. I have some personal business I have to attend to for the second half of Saturday, which is unfortunate. So, I mean, I guess let me know what happens in like the seventh round or whatever. I got to run.
And I will be tonight. I will be at Smithfield Hall in the city at a Knicks watch party because, of course, when it rains, it pours. And, you know, tonight we have the draft, obviously, but we also have Knicks game 3 and Lightning game 3. So, you know, my brain, multitasking that it is, will be I'll be handling the, you know, watching the Knicks with my phone, with the draft, watching the Talking Giants coverage. You know, so if you're in the city and you want to multitask with me, I'll be at Smithfield Hall. Just shoot me a DM. I'll let you know where and what's happening.
Awesome. I'm excited. It's going to be a good – it's been a good week for New York sports. So I'm hoping that the nuts. Giants on the clock doesn't shit the bed for everybody. but especially for the Giants because, you know, I know you're a great big Knicks fan. I know everybody here – listening to this as a Knicks fan. I know Brian Daboll and Joe Shane pretended to be Knicks fans.
I know one person who isn't. That would be Bobby Skinner. So for you.
Well, I mean, I'm certainly not a Rangers fan. So, I mean, I could care less. But it's a good feeling around when every team in one city is doing well.
Oh, it's exciting. I mean, you could feel the vibe at the Garden on Monday night. You could see just people walking around. I was walking around the city today and I saw a lot of Ranger jerseys. I saw a lot of Knicks things. I see, you know, it's exciting. And, you know, the problem is, you know, this city for so long has had to deal with bad basketball and quite frankly, bad football. Mm. And, you know, now at least one of the,
well, they've always had the Jets.
That's true. But I mean, we haven't held up our end of the bargain for, you know, a generation almost now. And, you know, hopefully that reversal of bad fortune, you know, and starting tonight with a draft that, you know, if it's not the most exciting and the most headline grabbing, does what it's supposed to do is make this team better. and start acquiring pieces that will make this team better in the short term and the long term. That's what we want.
I'm super excited. I know I look not excited, but I'm just tired. I am super
It's
excited.
also 11 o'clock at night on Monday, so we're all
Yeah.
tired.
But I'm super excited for tonight. I'm excited for the next couple of years, just like I am every time it's Christmas in April for me.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to talk about this for the coming weeks. So the next time that you and I will meet for this show will be for our normal Tuesday morning episode. That will give me plenty of time to
Oh yeah.
look at everything, look at it in context, fully break it down. I'm sure it could, because the UDFA signings come fast and furious on
Oh
Saturday.
God, yeah. And
So
I always make a point
that's like a
when I
whole other
go
draft class.
when I go through my thing about, how do you build a roster? It's not just a draft. It is trades, it is free agency, it is undrafted free agents. It's cut down moves. I mean, there's lots of different pieces. And yeah, you may not get a Pro Bowler on, on the signing on the Mad Wild West signings, but you might get a roster spotter too. It's really going to help your team. You might get a starter. You might get a depth piece that you really need. So the story is not over once Mr. Irrelevant is picked. It's really just continuing.
So we will see you guys then. iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and of course, YouTube. Until then, and tonight especially, go
Go
Giants.
Giants.